Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing
cake. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I am your host, Dave from LA, coming to you live from Figueroa number 6. And we have a live show for you today. Today is Tuesday, January the 10th, 2017. And I just want to thank you all for listening to Tando Radio Show today. So without further ado, we're going to get into today's show. Everyone, continue to support Black Talk Radio Network by going to the website for Black Talk Radio Network. And you'll see that is www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. And you will see the donation icon that is on the far right-hand margin. It's in green. You can't miss it. The holding hands. Make sure that you will be a part of this overall growth of this network and all the programs that are brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network by giving some of your financial energy. And you can simply do that by hitting that prompt there so that this network and these programs can continue to grow and expand in a way that will benefit you, your family, and our overall community. Also, BTR Community, Black Talk Radio Network, has a social media outlet known as BTR Community, and you can find that by going to www.btrcommunity.com, or also on the website for Black Talk Radio Network. You can see in the far right margin, if you go down a little further, you'll see the BTR Community icon, which is going to be a B. You'll see that large B that's there, the capital B that's there, and you can just hit that. And also, with that, that gives you access to social media platform that has been a social media platform that's been established by this network, which, in my opinion, is much better than the other mainstream governmental data mining entities that are on the web, which the web in itself is in some form and way, but that is specifically data mining your information and everyone you know, your family, and getting all of the information that's needed. And believe me, it is not being used for your benefit. It's actually being used against you. And a lot of you may not know that from your comments or some of the things that you've been posting, that could have adversely affected you in different positions. Well, at BTR Community, you don't have to worry about your identity being sold to the highest bidder, nor do you have to worry about being accosted or abused or just harassed for your overall postings, your comments, or anything of that nature. And I think it's very, very important that you engage in things that has been created for the best interest of you at hand. Now, BTR Community is $24 a year. $24 a year to be a member, and that is what it costs just to maintain the overall site and to grow, and it is definitely growing. I no longer post in Fedbook, you call it Facebook, at all anymore. Very, very soon I'm going to totally delete my profile, but I already was on there, so it's there, but I'm not going to engage in that social media platform anymore. So I just, not necessary. So definitely do that. Also, if you would like to acquire real money with your currency and your cash that you're paid, and today's show is going to be a lot about that, very, very, in my opinion, very, very important and great, great show we're going to have for you. You can do that by going to Prosperity Mint, ProsperityMint, Prosperity Mint, and check out what's there in inventory. And actually, if you are wanting to actually save as a king, or to save as a lady and a gentleman, that would be, saving as a king would be in gold, saving as a lady and a gentleman would be as in silver. Transfer some of your coupons into a real hard asset that is going to be very, very critical in the coming months, weeks, and years, because we're moving from a debt-based economy, paper-based debt promises, because they're no longer, the people's word has not been, people have not been keeping their overall promises, and debt default happens once the promise is no longer in service, and confidence in the ability for individuals to uphold that promise, once that's lost, there goes your currency. Very, very important that we understand why that is so important, and we're going to do the best that we can. But in order to acquire real money, and I call it the great creator's money, I call it the universal money, I call it the intrinsical money that establishes great prosperity and great wealth beyond your generation into multiple, multiple generations. And this is one of the ways that you can tell in today's economic standings if you're a slave or not. Hate to say the truth, but the truth is real, is that how many assets do you control? The fewer assets you control, the farther you fall into subjugation and enslavement. Sorry about that. I kind of tongue-tied there. The further you fall into subjugation and enslavement, it's assets, ladies and gentlemen, because when you have assets that have intrinsical value, you don't need the economy. The economy needs you. So we're definitely going to take a look at that today in today's very important show. So we're going to do that. So go to Prosperity Mint, and before you purchase there, make sure you email wolf6pack1@gmail.com. WOLF, the number 6, PACK, the number 1, @gmail.com. So let's jump into what's in the news. And I didn't post too much because I want to get into today's show. Very, very important. But we did post some things that what's in the news. First article comes from Reuters. Italy arrests two for hacking into the emails of ECB, the European Central Bank, Draghi, and former Italian Prime Minister Renzi. Rome, Italian police arrested two siblings on Tuesday for hacking into the emails of the European Central Bank President Mario Draghi and the former Prime Minister Renzi and thousands of others' accounts. The Rome court ordered the arrest of Giotto, whatever his name is, and his sister, Maria, 48, he's 45, she's 48, for stealing state secrets and illegally hacking. And the funny thing about this thing is he's supposed to be a high, I guess he was some high-ranking Masonic person. He may have been the head of the lodge, and I'm not quite sure what they call it, maybe the worshipful master, something like that. But he's supposed to be in somewhere in that. So just thought it was so strange and kind of very climactic to what's going on in today's world. So check out that article. Next article, very, very important article. My man Prince, the great spirit, the genius that continues to live. This is about Prince, and this comes from the Star Tribune. Prince's estate showed he hoarded cash, eschewed stocks, and had $25 million in property. An inventory of Prince's estate submitted to the probate court in Carver County this week shows that the musician had acquired tens of millions of dollars in real estate and other personal property at the time of his death last year. And so really quickly, I want to just take a look at some of the things in that article, what they talked about. Check out this article now. not only Prince had, you know, an extensive portfolio in real estate, didn't have any stocks or any bonds, smart, had around for his companies that he had, Paisley Park and NPG Enterprise, I believe that was. Let me pull it up real quick. So just some of the things that Prince had, I thought was very, very relevant. And you got to remember, Prince's intrinsic value was his overall artistry. And as long as he didn't squander that and lose that talent, he was always, he was relevant. And of course, he had a lot of assets as well. And I think that the assets that he has is far more than what they've had here. Well, this article's taking a while to pull up, but I'm going to just go over. So for his businesses, he was holding in physical form around, they said, around $6 million, and he had roughly around 67 10-ounce bars of gold, which is roughly around $900,000 in, I mean, the paper value of it was $900,000 around about that, but it was far more. And I'm very proud of Prince had that much gold, very significant. So let's take a look at this article. An inventory of Prince's estate submitted to Carver County District Court. The court reports offered a glimpse into the late megastar's estate, the subject of an ongoing probate case beginning days after his death. Okay, now, so let's get to it. Asset inventory compiled that the special administrator spearheading Prince's estate listed a dozen properties in Carver County with an estimated total value of $25.4 million. The inventory listed about $110,000 in four bank accounts, unclaimed property, capital credits, and cash, plus 67 10-ounce gold bars valued at, depending on at the moment, at the time that they were doing, nearly $840,000. And these were gold, physical gold bars that Prince had. And let me tell you, Prince was very iconic and very wise in his overall business dealings. And, but a lot of his wealth was also held in just his vault of music and everything else. But the article continues. That's just the beginning. However, well, that is the part that really, really matters. But Prince's companies, Paisley Park Enterprise and NPG Records, NPG Music Publishing, had more than $6 million in cash on hand at the time of his death. And NPG Records had an estimate of estimated at $6.8 million in receivables. There's also plenty of items that hadn't been assigned a value yet, including musical instruments, jewelry, collectibles, household furnishings, a Bentley, and the iconic Purple Rain and Graffiti Bridge motorcycles. So it goes on and goes on. So what does that tell you? Prince knew the difference between cash and real money. And this is what we need to really start to understand. We need to start to acquire real assets. Now, that holding of gold that Prince had far exceeds, and the reason why he had $6 million in cash is because of the business, but that gold holding of even short of $1 million in paper cash denomination was far more valuable than $6 million in cash. Far, far, far more in valuable. And so these are some of the things that we need to understand and get acquainted with and start to practice within our daily lives. So check out that article about the great genius of Prince. So next article goes into, this one comes from InvestorsResearchDynamics.com. Most overvalued stock market in U.S. history. Here's why. And this is very, very critical. And today's show, we need to talk about investing, how important it is, and we need to know the difference between, and we have to become prodigious savers. It's a discipline that we need to practice. And this is one of the things that we're going to take a look at. And we're going to definitely take a look at that in the first hour of the show. Next one, second hour of the show, very, very important. I'm going to try to jump into this probably even a little earlier because it's so important. Let me see. Let me move this down. It's Yamashita's gold hidden by Japanese soldiers found in the Philippines. This is very, very important and critical, and I'm going to talk about this. And we're actually, I'm going to play something from the American History Channel about Yamashita's gold. And this is very, very important because this goes back, in my opinion, ladies and gentlemen, has everything to do with what's going on now. You're going to see some historical relevance to it, but this actually goes back into Queen Khalifa's empire, the Caliphian empire, the Olmec empire, the different dynasties within China, and the melanated and the indigenous people on this planet. This is comes from, in my opinion, from there, and specifically from Queen Latifah's or the Caliphian empire. And this is very, very important that we check this out, and I want to put this all together to paint to you the importance of what you should be doing to protect yourself and your family. Now, today's show is Stocks and Bonds Will Break My Bones, But Gold Will Never Hurt Me. That's the topic of today's show is going to be Stocks and Bonds Will Break My Bones, But Gold Will Never Hurt Me. So I want to jump into that really quickly. Then I want to get into the so-called findings of Yamashita's gold and how, why that's so relevant. And we're going to have to read in between the lines because there's a lot about it, some unspoken truths that's here, but there's also some things that we should be learning from. And this has everything to do from Gaddafi to now, to back to Khalifa and the indigenous people of this planet. Time. This has everything to do with what we've walked away from and what we've been tricked and deceived out of. And not only that, the energy that we give is into a falsehood and a paradigm that actually enslaves us. So with that being said, I want to jump into this one article, the most overvalued stock market in U.S. history. And here's why. But before we do that, my man Scotty sent me a video he wanted me to take a look at about someone that was talking about investing into the stock market, just, you know, a small amount, $5 a day, and they came out with these, you know, this elaborate possibility of what it could earn and everything else. Well, I would just say there is no such thing as investing in stock market. There is no such thing as investing in the stock market, in the bond market. That's pure corporate gambling. Pure corporate gambling. And my opinion is if you want to gamble, that's fine. But I would always say to always know that the house wins. It's just like when you go into Vegas, for those of you that have been to Vegas, and if you sit down at the card table, if you sit down at the slot machines, or if you sit down and play roulette or whatever you choose to play, and then they bring you these drinks, if they do not charge you for those drinks, it's for a reason. It's because they want you to be inebriated further and to actually gamble away more by being intoxicated. That's just one of the things. That drink that they're giving you is really costing $500. They're not giving you anything for free, from the room to everything else, because once you walk into that casino, you have to know where you are. And when you walk into the casino of stocks and bonds and things of that nature, as long as you know that you are in gambling, you're not investing, you'll be in a better position because the house will always win. And this is very, very critical. And if you're going to do real investing starts with you being fiduciary discipline and becoming a prodigious saver. They talk about capitalism. You can't be a capitalist unless you've invested your cash or your energy into something that is going to bring you a more guaranteed return, and then you take that return and reinvested it into something else. That is what being a capitalist is. In today's society, the U.S. is no longer a capitalist society. It's a debt-based society. So just that has been far, far gone. Far gone. And so we need to know these things. Whenever you move into the corporate gambling home of known as stocks and bonds, believe me, they are rigging the system against you. And until we understand that and move that way and understand how that adversely affects us, then we will never understand what is happening to us economically. And then what it is happening economically is they're stealing your energy. So let's jump into this article from Investment Research Dynamics. It says, most overvalued stock market in U.S. history. Here's why. I find it to be mind-blowing. This is what the article says. I find it to be mind-blowing when financial advisors and stock market gurus get in their bubble visions or write seeking alpha articles. Move this down and assess that the stock market is a good relative value right now, which is nowhere near. It is not. It's the facade. Most people, and this is very critical, most people, if someone asks you how's the economy doing, the first thing that they do is look at the stock market. The stock market has nothing to do with the economy. The stock market is nothing more than the house gambling and fixing their books and cooking their books to deceive you out of what you've been paid in your labor. So it goes on to say, the article goes on to say, they are either dishonest, unethical, or just stupid. Likely a combination of all three, varying in different degrees. I would say that they are all equally dishonest, all equally unethical, and all equally stupid. But see, the thing is that those, they think you're stupid. That's the whole thing, and this is why they come up with these elaborate things. If you ever look at the stock market, they never – just really take a look at it. Count how many times they say the exact same thing. It's a good time to buy. 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 Should be buying, buying, buying. This is a time that you – just really look at it all. Because those individuals are reading from a teleprompter and are being paid to – say what they're saying as actors to persuade you through marketing to engage in the market itself. The market is only going to appear to pay you. And at the appropriate time, and I would always say, especially for people that get into the market, if you are not disciplined when you get into the market, you will get smashed because it's rigged. They only make you think that you've been winning. But let's get back to the article before we go to a commercial break. And a likely a combination of all three. Here's a chart with which everyone is familiar. So listen, let's go ahead and get into the commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to jump back on this. I want to hurry up and get through this so that we can get into a very, very important part of the show today, dealing with some historical goals, and we got a goal, and we have to read between the lines because this system continues to steal from you, your family, and our overall community at large and subjugate and enslave them. And how they're doing it, they're doing it by economics. That is the great step. You're listening to The Great Thief. You're listening to Tando Radio Show brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after these quick commercial breaks.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Candle Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I am your host, Dave from L.A., and if you'd like to get in on the conversation at any time, give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, and hit star, we'll see you in queue, and if not, just say, excuse me, I'll see you, especially if I'm reading something. My man Scotty wanted to chime in on what we were talking about as far as the difference between investing and gambling, and what the system is teaching you to do is to gamble away your overall life savings and your life's energy. So go ahead, Scotty.
Hey, Dave, and hey to all the Tando
listeners.
What's
up, brother?
Hey, I'm good. I was talking about talking to one of our Black Talk Radio hosts, and we were talking about, he was saying how he's a visual person and it helps him in learning to visualize something. And we were talking about, you know, radio broadcasting and the technical stuff involved in that. But, you know, that principle is the same for a lot of people in terms of visualizing. So I want people to visualize what you're talking about when you're talking about Wall Street is just like Las Vegas, walking into whatever the Las Vegas Strip is. Okay, pretty much Wall Street is the same thing. You're going in to place your bets, and it is a gamble. So I just wanted to share an example using politics, people might be paying attention to, particularly because of who's this incoming celebrity figurehead, and they might be paying attention to all the people that he's appointing because of the stories that's surrounding them. But, okay, for example, take modern-day slavery and human trafficking legalized by the 13th Amendment, which means that still today, slave trading goes on Wall Street just like it did pre-1865.
Yes.
And so how do you do that? By investing, by purchasing the stock of companies like the Geo Group or Core Civic or MTC. These are private prisons that rely on contracts from the federal government and states in order to have a business to participate in human trafficking and slavery, because they are going to put the people to work. They're not only going to get paid by the federal government or the state, they're still going to get paid. So considering that Trump has said in the past that he supports private prisons, people speculating, watch, you know, looking to place a bet, said, well, you know, since he said that, and the outgoing administration was talking about shutting them down and their stock went way down. Now with him saying that and then him winning, the stock has gone through the roof. So they had placed their bets and they riding that high right now. They're betting that private prisons during the Trump administration is going to be profitable. But anything could happen, yeah. like lawsuits, civil lawsuits could happen. The Supreme Court ordering the state of California that you need to depopulate your prisons by, I forget how many thousands they said, I think 120,000 prisoners they had to set free, were ordered to set free, but they moved them to private prisons again. So, but if something happens, let's say that a bill does pass and Trump, for whatever reason, unexpectedly, let's say a bill, Justice is Not for Sale Act, passes through Congress, which would ban private prisons and what have you. So nobody's expecting Trump to sign that into law. They're still going to hold on to their private prison stocks, betting that, you know, gambling that he's going to veto it and what have you. And so, I mean, that right there shows you that it's a gamble. If he vetoes it, you lose everything. Your stock's going to tumble. Hey, you've lost it. You lost your shirt. It's time to find an 8-story building to jump off of because you was invested in slavery any damn way, and we don't need you walking around on this earth. But I mean, is that a good example, you think, of showing the gambling nature? You're placing bets.
Exactly, and just to piggyback on that, Scotty, is that, you know, you may think that in the market that you are not upholding slavery, but you are, because there are mutual funds, there are hedge funds There are subsidiaries that are not telling you that that's what they are investing in. There's so much. The very different ethical things that you are against by going into the market, they don't tell you what they're investing in. They don't tell you what they're completely investing in, how they're doing it, why they're doing it, what they made, and what their true books are. And this is crazy. And this example that you gave, Scotty, is exactly it. And it's really, whenever you go into, and I always like to, like I said earlier, I always like to use Vegas, because you go with the intent of coming away with cash. Now, what is cash? Cash is nothing more than a coupon, or a, as I always say, is what they pay slaves, because it's a debt instrument. And what are we giving up for these debt instruments? What are we giving up for these slave coupons? What are we giving up for these worthless pieces of paper? We're giving up our energy in all forms and fashions. They've got us so discombobulated by this. Cream, cash rules everything around me. And if you understand what that really means, is not what you think, that it's something that you should be actually participating in, it's something that you should be protecting yourself from. So when you go into the casino, that building that you go into, you did not build. You do not know how the slot machines are timed, do you? Did you time the slot machines? No. Did you time the roulette wheel? I hope I got that right. Did you load the dice? No, 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 no. In all of these entities, these buildings are quite elaborate for one reason and one reason only. Because the moment you step in, they are winning. But if you know that and understand how it's played, that's cool. But what I would always say is this, and this is how you know it's the exact same thing with investing in the stock market and in the bond market. You do not know that hedge fund manager. You do not know that broker. You do not know all of the things about that, that this whole facade of investing that they don't teach you that. They tell you to give it to us and we'll take care of it. And then they tell you that they'll promise to give. They don't even promise you anything. We'll say that we'll take care of it. And then they lose it. No, they don't lose it. They actually swindle it out of you in so many different ways, by your pension, by your investments, and everything else. This whole thing is an economic sham built off of a piece of paper, a promise, that you hold on to, and they strangle you by. And that's critical. And that is extremely, extremely critical. So know what's really going on. And we are killing people for a piece of paper that has no real value at all. And it's really something that we need to know and the difference of. So getting back to this article, check this out. Here we go. So the article continues. Here's a chart which everyone is familiar with, the Shiller's P.E. ratio. And this is from the Gap accounting changes. The last two decades has invalidated values and comps. So here it is. And this chart, make sure you all go and pick up and into BTR and look at this article for yourself that we post the most from IRD, most overvalued stock market in U.S. history. And here's why. Based on the graphic, it looks like the current stock market is only the third most overvalued in history, right? Wrong, because here's what it says. It's below the two other peaks, and it has that, but here's why they tell you that that's wrong. The problem comparing the current P.E. ratios of the S&P 500, Standard & Poor 500 companies with with that of the previous stock bubble tops is that the accounting used to produce the E is not comparable over time. The FASB and the SEC have colluded to make it easier for companies to hide losses and report non-cash income as GAAP, cash flows and earnings. This is why I tell you this whole thing is a sham and it's a lie. All of the stock market companies are private corporations that are using you to maintain their overall appetite for acquiring real wealth. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is assets. And their books are completely cooked. One of the things about the stock market, either by pension or by broker, is this. They say, pay me now, and I promise I'll give you something later. And this is all done throughout the whole baby boomers because there was a large population. So what did the market have to do? They had to have climbs and declines and say, don't worry about it. You invest for the long haul. Go ahead and invest for the long haul and see what happens now. You are moving into a new paradigm economically. The debt bubble is going to explode. And when it does, it's going to wipe out everything that you put into it. Now, how do you play this? You invest, you don't gamble. You don't gamble what you can't afford to lose. You don't gamble with your life savings. What is your life savings, really? Most of us don't really know what that means. Most of us think that our life savings is the cash that we have in the bank. That's not it at all. Let me tell you what your life savings is. Your life savings is the energy that you use to work with, and you were paid some form of either paid as a king or a queen, paid as a lady and gentleman, or paid as a slave. Okay? That was what you were given in exchange for your energy. And if you tied that into a debt instrument and you tied that into a coupon that is going to expire. They just don't write the expiration date on it, but it expires right in front of you because it requires you to put up more cash to buy underlying assets. That means that the asset is not going up, ladies and gentlemen. It means your cash is going down. The value of it and the purchasing power of it is going down. What does that mean? What they're paying you no longer can buy the asset. And you won't be able to keep up with it. They come up with elaborate things. They call it inflation. No, what it is a hidden tax and it's theft, ladies and gentlemen. They've been stealing your energy. Why? Because they know that you're not getting younger, you're not getting stronger, you're actually getting older and weaker. And at the appropriate time, when you no longer can give your energy as profit for them, they discard you. Wherever you work, whomever you work for, outside of yourself and your family, that corporation or that private business is going to do a couple of things. They are either going to retire you or fire you. That is what they're going to do. Now, the key is, what are you doing with your energy? That's investing, ladies and gentlemen, where you take your energy and you actually move it into something that is intrinsical and has value. And I always say, I like to always go into living forms of living assets that just because they exist, they matter and they have real value. Cash does not matter. The intrinsical value of cash is very limited. Meaning, just because it exists, what can it do? Cash, really intrinsically, all it can do is you can write a note on it, give it to someone else, or the same things that you can do with paper. That's its value. And you always heard the saying, the old saying, is only worth the paper is written on, because paper is not worth much. The debt instrument. So, very important that we grasp these things. So So now, let me go on. I went a little too far. Here we go. As an example, in 2010, the FASB issued a bulletin which changed the way big Wall Street banks were allowed to account for bonds and other forms of debt issued by others. They are held as assets, and debt is not an asset. It's something that you can use as leverage, but the thing about leverage is great when it works for you, it's not great when it works against you. Originally, banks had to market their bonds, debt, loans, holdings to market and accrue any market to value gains or losses at quarter end as either income or expenses. The FASB decided to let bank classify any and all debt as hold to maturity and allow banks to hold this debt at face maturity value without even marking to market, meaning its real value. Any debt that was marked below maturity value per value could be marked up to par and moved into held to maturity accounts. They were using paper to establish and steal even more resources and to steal more energy, ladies and gentlemen. This is the cookbooks working against you. And one of the things I always say, if you don't know about the precious metals, you don't know nothing about economy, and you definitely don't know nothing about history, how these people are stealing and what they're the whole thing about subjugating and stealing and capturing people is to steal their energy and steal their energy and have it work for you so you don't have to work and to seize their assets as yours. This is critical that we understand these things. Now, it goes on. By doing so, the banks created a non-cash gain in these holdings that were counted as income. Banks hold hundreds of billions in bonds and loans. And starting in 2011, the rule changed, allowing banks to create billions in phantom non-cash income. This, of course, translated into lower P.E. ratios. Goes on to say, there's several areas of accounting over the years that have accomplished a familiar feat for all public trading companies. The problem is that this has rendered P.E. ratios over time incapable of course. No one points out this fact, and certainly any Wall Street analyst would be fired if they went on a truth tirade. The bottom line is that looking at the P.E. ratios graphics above, we do not know how the current P.E. ratio for the SPX compares with the P.E. ratio of the market's peak in 2007 and 2019. 29. Why? Because it's far worse than that right now. They're just able to hide it in their deception because we know nothing about economy. We are victimized by it. We are schooled into what we're supposed to perform and what we're supposed to do and what we're supposed to be, not in what we should be knowing that's in our best interest. That, ladies and gentlemen, is education. Mining your mind. Goes on. Goes on. Because of these accounting gimmicks and these tricks, and that's what they are, these phantom numbers that enable companies to boost gaps in non-cash earnings. And it could be that the current P.E. ratio is the highest on record. If we make an apple-to-apple comparison of P.E. ratios across time, in fact, I would assess that applying the standard gap across time would prove that the current market is more overvalued than any time in U.S. history. The above analysis is an expert for my latest issue of the short-selling journal in today's issues into two retail stocks. Now, what does that mean, ladies and gentlemen? Is that they're hiding what their intentions is, to get away with the theft by crashing the market. And why? And Scotty had talked about it earlier. Because they put into place the perfect celebrity figurehead to do just that. The last one served up greatly, and the one before that served up greatly, and this one will serve up greatly to the system as well. And the thing about it is that we've been condoning, supporting, aiding, and abetting this through our school domesticated minds and not thinking for ourselves. We wait to hear someone else before we have an opinion or before we make a decision on what we should do, because that's what we've been taught to obey. They taught that in so many ways, and they taught it by way of fear and way of false gains. So there's algorithms. They can push that stock market wherever they want it to go because they created it. You didn't create it. It don't work for you. It's actually being worked against you. This is why it's so important that we understand where we are and what it is that we are doing. Become an investor. First, you become a prodigious saver. Even though the system may not be paying you a king's wage or a queen's wage, that doesn't mean you can't save in one. You save in assets, ladies and gentlemen, because the intrinsic value of it can supersedes the default of debt. When people can't pay their debt, would you give your life savings to someone that is always defaulting on debt? No. Because they're going to default on your, they're going to use your life savings to overextend their overall credit reach. That's the exact same thing that the government and the stock market and the bond market is doing with your savings. And the banks are doing with your savings. Now, if you know that, then there's ways in which you can protect yourself and then actually leverage debt to your benefit. And what do I mean by leverage debt? What I mean by leverage debt, I'm not just talking about the contractual debt. The greatest debt that you have is that piece of paper in your pocket. We're all addicted to debt. We got a debt problem. We save in debt. That piece of paper, look how that worked out for India. Look how that's working out in Venezuela. Look how that's working out in Mexico. And pretty soon, people in other countries are going to be saying that have shows like ours, look how that's working out in the United States. We just don't want you to be corralled with the rest of the people in that, because you don't have to be. The only person that you should be trusting financially is the one that's creating the energy to facilitate that savings. That would be you. And if we continue to obey and follow their rules, they will rule, and you will be subjugated, enslaved, and taken advantage of, victimized, and deceived until the point of economic disaster. And we have walked away from the economy that was always in our best interest. And that was the ecosystem. And you hear me say this all the time. Man can't live on bread alone. What you think that they mean by bread? That was the economy system that they had established. So, very, very important. So, just wanted to say that to you all. I'm not quite sure if Brother Davis is there, in case he wanted to chime in real quick about why it's Wednesday. If you're there, Brother Davis, jump in. And then we're going to go to a commercial break. But listen, the next part of this that, and I wanted to say that sticks and stones stocks and bonds will break your bones, but gold will never hurt you. That is critical. But go ahead, Scotty.
I wonder if that's where the term bread for money came from. Because some people, I remember, back in the day, especially in the 70s, they would call money bread. You got my bread, man. You know what I'm saying? I wonder if that's where that came from.
And I gave my, you know, I've always thought that that's exactly where it came from, because remember, this is when after Jesus was coming out, biblically speaking, when Jesus was coming out from the temptation, that's when the devil came and tempted and said, you know, gave him the temptations. And then he said, if you will bow down before me, I will give you all of this. What was he pointing to? He was pointing to the establishment that the economy had built. And that's when the response was, man can't live on bread alone. Why is that so important? Here's the key to that. Bread is not a part of the ecosystem. It's a part of a food that is created by the process of yeast through manipulation of man's hand. But on every word that proceeds from the great creator's mouth. Now that is assets, living sustainability of the ecosystem. And many of us that went right, that was an economic statement. That was a very much so an economic statement. Why would I want your economy that will enslave me? I don't need bread. Man, so important. So that is how I took it, and there are so many other things. That's why, also biblically speaking, when Jesus was in the temple, and when he whipped those that were in the temples with the cat and nine tails, it actually was whipping them and turning over the tables. Here's what was said: "You have turned my father's house into a den of thieves." What is the father's house? In my opinion, the earth and all the ecosystems around. You've established these walls that steal and enslave and subjugate. And that was the money changers. They changed the way we look at money. We think cash and bread is money, and it's not. It's an instrument to enslave and kill you. While we walked away from what real money is, real money comes from the ecosystem. It's sustainable. It sustains life forms everywhere. Cash does not sustain any form of life. It manipulates it. Very, very important. So listen, everyone, we're getting ready to go to a commercial break. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, don't hesitate. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, then hit **. We'll see you in queue. And if I'm reading something or doing something, just say, excuse me, I'll hear you, and we'll come back to you definitely. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network, and we'll be right back after these quick commercial breaks.
Black Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent Black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of Black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for Black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new Black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public Black radio for the masses.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I am your host, Dave from L.A., coming to you live from FEMA Region Number 6. We have a caller in queue, so I want to go to that caller. Caller that's calling, I think that's Brother Davis, 215 area code. You're on with Tando Radio Show. Oh, no, it's not Brother David. What's going on, Brother? Go ahead.
What's happening? Hey, this is Seymour down in San Diego. I just wanted to call with a comment. You know, thank you for putting on the show. I've been listening for a little over a year. A lot of information on a daily basis. Really appreciate that. Shout out to Brother Reed for making everything happen. But to everyone listening out there, I just wanted to say, like, you know, you kind of got to heed some of these warnings, because for those who don't know, like I said, I'm down here in San Diego, and the gasoline crisis you were talking about in Mexico, I think it was last Thursday or maybe sometime last week. It's getting really real out here, man. Like, there were riots in Tijuana and Rosarito, just over the border. And, like, you know, they had to call out, I guess, the Mexican version of the National Guard to, like, calm it down. And then on this side of the border, it's like a suburb or a little town called San Ysidro. And, mm-hmm. I mean, like this week, like, it looks like the 1970 gas crisis out there. Like, straight up, like, you can't pull into a gas station without being, like, 12 or 13 cars deep, and they're not moving. They just ran an article on the news last night talking about they always interview one, but they interviewed somebody from Mexico, and he's like, yeah, I make $100 a week. That's about $400 a month. I literally took the day off just so I could spend $75 for gas just so I can get to work. He's like, I don't know how I'm going to feed my family this month. Like, it's really real out here, man.
Yeah, and you know what, brother? I want to thank you for calling. I'm very familiar with that area of San Diego from living in Southern California, not too far from there. I lived in the Inland Empire, just so you know, you know where that is, and not too far from there.
Yeah.
And man, I'm so glad that you called in, because what you're seeing in Mexico is not just an aberration. It's not something that's not real. This is happening globally, and in major economies. I mean, in India, the seventh largest economy in the world, the euro is done. The U.S. is done. It's only a matter of time. And now, where you are, when things go awry, it could be really, really bad, because the close proximity to so many people, and there aren't a lot of places that you can go. So, brother, I would definitely say prepare, have a plan, and you know how important gas is, especially trying to get out. If you had to get out of San Diego, there's very few places to go, and they're long stretches, and there's a lot of people. So, and you know that from the wildfires. I mean, gas becomes so, so critical. So just make sure that you protect yourself, brother, and have a plan. And don't wait until the proverbial stuff hits the fan, okay?
Right. Yeah, man, I appreciate you. Like I said, I'm prepping, and I'm trying to get, you know, little things squared away here and there, each and every paycheck. You know,
yeah,
but that, like I said, I didn't really have too much to add to it. I just wanted to throw out that little blurb for a little,
That was a lot, bro, because that's exactly what you're saying is happening right there in on the border. That stuff is gonna come across, and that's exactly right. It takes, and gas is creeping up, and it's going to creep up, and it was down for a reason. I always thought that was the government filling up their strategic reserves, and lo and behold, I said that a while ago, then lo and behold, China says that their strategic reserves are practically full, and then now the U.S. is starting to say that they're starting to use some of their strategic reserves, because that's designed for them to lose the war. So great, great call, brother. Keep us informed what's going on, and these are the things that we need to know. I greatly, greatly appreciate you. You added a whole lot to the show, because this is, you know, our in the field reporting is so, so critical. So, so critical, because it gives us a better perspective of what's really happening, okay? What's not being said within the mainstream media. What you need to know and start to have on your overall discussions and in your plans to protect yourself, your family, and our overall community. Much love, much respect. Brother Davis, unmute yourself real quick if you can. I'll do it for you. I'm not quite sure. Let me see. Brother Davis?
Yes, brother.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Davis?
And it's always good to hear the voice of a friend. You know that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Well, I was trying to catch more of your show tonight. It's been a tight night for us. we were doing some personal research, and sometimes when I get to research with my wife, time flies. But listen, I wanted to definitely give a shout out about tomorrow night's show. And the reason why, in this new year, I was trying to start the year off hard, letting them know that at this stage of the game, we must take action. So in doing in the same rhythm, the tomorrow night show is going to be about staying focused. And the reason why it's going to be about staying focused is because of the elements of your thought process. You speak a lot about energy. Well, one of the unique things about energy is that if it's wasted, then it's useless. And see, a lot of people fail to realize the programming that is going on here in the West is so you can waste your energy. And the reason why is because you can't keep your focus. And that's why at this particular time I thought maybe I should come back to the position of helping people understand the importance of keeping their focus, because we need to make change. And how do you do that? By one specific avenue at a time. And by the time we reach the end, we can literally improve the quality of the person we are by doing just that. We'll be taking control of our energy back. So I'm looking forward to Wise Wednesdays, and I'm having some time with people I love, give them what my heart has for them. So excellent show tonight, Dave, and I'll sit back and continue this.
My brother, give my regards to Sister Davis. Much love and much respect. So tomorrow, I'm glad that Brother Davis is so true that focus is critical, because focus is the overall lasering in the commitment of your energy. And that is something that we definitely have to become very focused in, so that we will not actually lose our place, be diverted, or actually be knocked off of course when we establish things that are in our best interest, and so that we can continue to move without giving any thought to the temptations of falling back into what has been so destructive to us all, and being a part of the prosperity that's lost, and keeping our focus on the prosperity that is yet to be gained. And that is more than just any dollar amount. This has everything to do with our overall reconnection onto who we really are. So looking forward to that, Brother Davis, on focus. So now, check this out, everyone. Now, what I want to do is I want to jump into the next portion of the show. And it's really, really important. I got this from the American, what channel was this? American History Channel, I believe it was, a while ago. And I wanted to wait. And it's funny how, you know, you wait and you wait. I wanted to wait until there was a significant event. And so they're saying now that Yamashita's gold has been found. And this is very critical. And I want you to pay attention to this and listen, and then we're going to come back. We may have to pick this up, back up on Thursday, but that's fine. But this is very, very important. And I want you to see the emphasis that the conquerors place on acquiring real assets. Because when you control energy and you control assets, you can create an environment where the people will surrender their sovereignty and self-determination to you, and that is what has been done. So I want to jump into this without further ado, and if we I'm going to break in from time to time, but here we go. Listen to this. This is from the American History Channel, and it's about very, very important, the Yamashita gold, and this has everything to do with you, the indigenous people of this hemisphere and this land, and of this living being known as Terra, the Earth. Here we go. Tara.
One of the greatest treasure hoards ever known.
In today's currency, it represents over $100 billion.
According to the myth, this incredible fortune was amassed from proceeds of ruthless Japanese looting throughout Asia during World War II. For one amateur treasure hunter, finding the gold becomes a lifelong obsession. But little did he know, he has a mighty rival, one of the most brutal dictators of the 20th century.
Marcus was unquestionably a thug. He was a gangster.
This is the extraordinary story of Roger Rojas, the legend of Yamashita's gold.
I wanted to stop it there. Now, the Marcos that they were talking about is the Philippine Marcos. And this is one of the things that they won't tell you about, that Marcos was very key, because Marcos was a lawyer and he knew what the U.S. was up to. He knew what they were up to because he could read legal documents. And Marcos knew that they were trying to steal gold. That was one of the things that he knew. And he was instrumental with the Hunt brothers during the 80s in trying to corner silver, as well as with Gaddafi. So just want you to know that it was Marcos, Gaddafi, the Hunt brothers, and an unnamed Saudi royal prince who I believe happened to be king, possibly even now. And this is why they had to deal with them in a different way. So let's get back to it. Very important.
The legend of Yamashita's gold is one of the greatest stories of war loot in history. By 1942, the Japanese Imperial Army has successfully invaded all of Southeast Asia. As they advance, they mercilessly ransack country after country. They steal on a massive scale.
Now, real quick, I want you to remember, we did this show about Franklin Delano Roosevelt and about John Forbes Carey, the current celebrity figurehead state. And this is all about, in their opium trade, their family's opium trade, this is all about seizing part of the Khalifian gold hoard, and this is all about moving towards China. And this is actually still happening as we speak right now. Very critical. So here we go. Let me get back to it.
Reportedly unrivaled in military history.
Yamashita's gold is wealth beyond belief. People wouldn't believe how much it is. $1 trillion worth. So it's a mind-blowing amount.
The mastermind heading this covert operation, codenamed the Golden Lilith, is said to be Prince Chichibu, the Emperor's brother.
This guy is brilliant. Prince Chichibu was a perfect choice to head up the Golden Lily because he wasn't just a military man. He was an Oxford scholar, and he brought an incredible amount of creativity and lateral thinking to how we'll go about this complex process of looting. The Golden Lily operatives just completely took everything from all the countries. They left them with nothing. They invaded, they took all their wealth, and just left them penniless. It wasn't just banks and financial institutions, but it also had museums, temples, art galleries, rare books, anything that was worth money. They knew about it, knew where it was, how much it was worth, and they took it. The Golden Lily's looting was so comprehensive, they even targeted the underworld, the gangster world, the black markets, and they absolutely drained them of anything that was of value.
Having amassed treasures of all shapes and sizes, the Golden Lily's mission is far from over. They need to get it back home to Japan. First, they melt the gold into easy-to-move ingots. But this smelting also serves a shadier purpose.
When gold is made, it's stamped, and you can tell where it came from. But when it's been re-smelted, you don't know where it came from. We wanted to stamp a little sign on the gold bars that the gold was actually made in Japan. Then it would look like the gold was Japanese gold of Japanese origin.
This stolen gold is then brought to the Philippines. There, it is inventoried and sent on to Japan by ship.
The Philippines was chosen as the Golden Lily's transportation hub because it was pretty much in the center of the vast Japanese empire.
Okay, now, I wanted to stop there real quick. Now, let me tell you, in my opinion, where this gold, all of this gold started to really originate, and that's so true. One of the things you always hear me say is that you can never own gold. You can, in the precious metals, you can only control it. Most people think that you can own it. You can't own it. You can only control it. Because if they put fire to it, they can melt it down. And that's why it's so important. Whenever you have gold now or silver now, you don't know. That could have been actually silver from Queen Sheba or Queen Khalifa, or gold from Queen Khalifa, or gold from Queen Sheba, or Mansa Musa gold. Mansa Musa's gold is still everywhere because it's been so treasured that gold has been treasured, so they don't consume it. Silver is so valuable that they've had to consume it. So this is very important. This gold, and actually and all this gold that was being taken from all over the South Pacific and all of that area, that is part of the old trade routes of the Omaks and the Caliphians. That's where this gold really comes from. Very, very critical. And China and Japan and what's going on right now is all about that, still and foremost, the conquering of the indigenous. Here we go. Continue.
For the first year of operations, the Golden Lily's transportation network runs like clockwork. But then, the tide of the war turns. In June 1942, Japanese and U.S. forces meet near the tiny Pacific island of Midway. Over just 4 days, the U.S. forces sink 5 Japanese ships. They destroy 270 aircraft and kill 3,500 men. The Japanese have lost control of the seas. Now it is too risky for them to ship the gold home. They need a new plan.
Okay, I want to let me stop it right there. Now, why is this so relevant? This is the deception of war. They gave the perception that these governments were actually fighting each other when they weren't. This was a move against the indigenous people to steal their overall resources in order to control them even further under the cloak and cover of war. They were they're all in this together. They were actually pillaging to send that back to Japan, and the excuse was that Japan had no resources. It was under a sanction from the U.S. and it was starving. So they had to do what? Put assets into their overall holding in order for their nation to be viable. Well, let me tell you something. That citizenry stuff, you're a citizen of this nation and that nation, that's what keeps you enslaved. And not looking at, when you claim that type of stuff, what happens is this, is that you become a part of their overall maritime law system. And now they got you right where they want you. And then the confusion and the schooling and the stealing of their assets, so now you'll have to work for them, ways and means. Your way of life becomes their means of life. Man, this stuff is so deep. And this is what conquerors do. they have to deceive you into think one thing while their intentions is something totally different. So keep that in mind. Here we go.
They turn to their finest fighting general, Tomoyuki Yamashita.
He has an incredible track record. Nobody has the reputation he does. And if anyone can pull him out of the hat, it would be him.
With the gold now stuck in the Philippines, Yamashita is being asked to come up with a miracle. The story goes he is told to hide the gold until it is safe to move. He identifies 175 suitable burial sites across the Philippines. They will hold the gold until the Japanese are once again victorious. And the Philippines proved the ideal place to hide this treasure.
They put it in very isolated parts throughout the Philippines, mostly covered by very mountainous terrain and a thick, thick jungle. Once you got these tunnels built, it would become virtually impossible to see that there had been anything ever buried there because of the growth rate of in the jungle.
Yamashita orders detailed maps to be made of the exact location of each treasure vault. And each map is carefully encoded.
These maps were done in an old Japanese dialect called Kanji, a language which is between 1500 and 2000 years old, and there were no topographical references on them. They used the old characters to represent certain landmarks.
Unless you know the complex code, these maps mean it. And there are even further layers of security.
Bombs, grenades, decoy walls that would lead you into another trap. The Golden Lily left nothing to chance. And they had a vast system of booby traps that consisted of poisonous gas, explosives, complex use of the water table. So if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to drown in your pursuit of reaching the treasures.
But the maps that were drawn highlighted where all those traps were. If you didn't have a map and you went into one of these treasure vaults, it's very likely that you wouldn't come out alive.
And to ensure all the treasure vault locations remain top secret, the number of people in the know is ruthlessly kept to a minimum.
They use prisoner of war or local slave labor to build the actual treasure vaults. And the people who are building it don't know why, but that's irrelevant. They're going to die anyway. They're usually killed, shot on the spot.
Okay, I wanted to stop there. Now, during this time, the Japanese military was known as probably the most brutal military organization in the world. And during that time, it was known that you never, ever wanted to be captured by the Japanese because their overall torture and their overall violence towards people was unprecedented. And this is all a part of the conquering of people. And so critical that we know these things. So we're going to listen to a couple of some more. Then we're going to hit a break and come back with this very, very important. This has everything to do with you because this actual gold is actually the prosperity that was removed from you for you to be enslaved. Critical that we know these things. So let's get back to it.
For all the other cheetahs, the gold 1944, the Americans land in the Philippines.
How convenient, huh? How convenient that is.
The fighting that follows is the bloodiest of the Pacific War.
Fighting in the Philippines at the end of the war was extremely brutal.
Yamashita would fight to the very last man for the emperor.
Even a master tactician like Yamashita can't stop the Americans' advance.
The Philippines has 7,000 plus islands and is very, very difficult to defend against the invading force. Yamashita, as a great general, would have known that.
He knew he couldn't hold the Philippines. All he could do was drag out the fight for as long as possible. Yamashita needs to buy himself time. He still hasn't finished burying the gold. April 1945. The Japanese are losing the war in the Pacific. Japanese General Tomoyuki Yamashita's priority now is to hide the looted gold. While U.S. naval forces continue to advance, Yamashita is forced to retreat back to the mountains around the northern city of Baguio.
Their systematic hiding of their national treasure becomes less systematic and more panicked. They need to do it immediately because they're about to suffer defeat. 174 treasure vaults done and dusted. Only one is left.
With time running out, Yamashita orders the chief engineers to seal the final treasure vault.
These engineers knew everything. They knew how the maps were made. They knew where the burial sites were. They knew how they were booby trapped.
What they don't know is that Yamashita has one last move to protect the gold. The story goes that while the engineers are carrying out his orders, Yamashita seals the vault himself. The engineers are still inside. Now they will be its guardians for eternity. Three months later, World War II is over. General Yamashita is put on trial for war crimes.
Commission finds you guilty of charges and sentences you to death by hanging.
Yamashita takes the secrets of the gold to his grave. There is only one other person who allegedly knows of the gold's whereabouts. Prince Chichu. And in 1953, he dies of TB.
Anybody who knew anything about this treasure is now dead.
All right, so I'm going to hold it right there. Get ready to go to a commercial break. And just before we end, I'm going to jump in with what some of my research has found and why this is so, so important. You're listening to Tando Radio Show. We're going to just listen to like 15 minutes more if you wanted to jump into it. We're going to finish this because it's critical for where we are right now. You can definitely give us a call at 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after these quick commercial breaks.
podcast and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. The Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We just got like 15 minutes more. I'm going to play up this, and then we're going to get into it. And before we do that, I just want to say this. This is very, very important, because this has everything to do with you. This is, it. From my research, the mining of this gold and a lot of the gold that's was done during the Calypsoan, the Olmecs, and some of the ancient times when the indigenous people ran from, I mean, had occupied from Central America, what's known as the United States, over into the South Pacific, over into Asia, and pretty much globally. Their technology and their ability to mine some of the most difficult gold or gold from some of the hardest, most difficult places in the world was completely mastered by them. And they was able to acquire. One of the things that they talk a lot about gold, but the key to this whole thing is what they don't tell you is the silver. Much more, that is far more important than the gold. So much that they don't talk about it at all. But the clues are there, and the evidence is there if you just would actually look, and then you'll see where it leads you to. And this is why we have lost some of our sovereignty and our overall prosperity, because we are no longer self-sufficient. So, and we no longer rely on the ecosystem. So, man, this stuff is so, so important. So let's jump back into it. And then if you'd like to chime in, don't hesitate. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025, and hit star, C-U-N-Q. So let's get back to it.
It seems Yamashita's gold is lost forever. But in the Philippines, after the horrors of war, the legend of Yamashita's gold lives on. There were lots of rumors that the Japanese had buried treasure all over the Philippines. It's almost a national obsession. Everybody across the country is aware of it, and everyone's looking for it. Among those who grew up with stories about the gold is a young Filipino locksmith. Rogelio Rojas, better known as Roger, is born in 1943, just as Yamashita's gold is being buried.
Roger's childhood was really difficult. The Philippines are extremely impoverished. His family is impoverished.
Roger is one of millions of Filipinos growing up in the shadow of World War II.
The war had devastated the Philippines. But it was absolutely on its knees in a way that no other city in the whole of the Second World War, other than Warsaw. It was dreadful. Hundreds of thousands killed, families broken up, desperate poverty, no real economy going. It was in a really bad state.
There was no surprise. The legend of Yamashita's gold just took Roger by heart at a very young age. Someone that poor with a possibility of obtaining wealth beyond your wildest dreams, of course you're going to go for it.
Roger the Locksmith lives in Baguio, the northern city near to where Yamashita made his last stand.
Roger surmises that they must have hid some of the treasure around his town. So he looks around his town right from the start, because he knows logically that's probably one of the best places to start.
Roger was a very diligent man. Every spare moment he was out there working, seeing what he could find, eliminating areas, and continuing to move forward in a very logical, progressive manner.
To help him in his quest, Roger scrimped and saved and bought himself a metal detector. Yet all Roger has ever managed to find are a few old coins and some Japanese ammunition. But that doesn't shake his faith. One day he is sure he will come across the treasure he's been dreaming of since he was a boy.
No matter how many disappointments a treasure hunter has, they will always keep going.
Then, in 1961, after years of hunting the gold, Roger has what seems to be a breakthrough. He gets the kind of clue he'd been longing for, a map of a tunnel complex. There are lots of maps and sketches like this in treasure hunting circles at the time. Roger has seen plenty of them before, but all have been fakes. This one is different. This map had come from a Japanese soldier.
He's convinced that this is the real deal.
The problem is, the map is in the Golden Lily's fiendishly complex code.
It's a needle in a haystack, and you don't even know where the haystack is because the map has no topographical features.
But Roger also knows that this Japanese soldier had been in Baguio with a group of engineers as they buried gold during the final days of Yamashita's retreat. A map allegedly related to one of those treasure vaults.
It was getting closer. He could feel it.
Roger never gives up, and the reason is he knows the treasure is there, and he knows that year after year, if nothing else, he's eliminating where it isn't.
For all his high hopes, Roger just can't crack the map's code. After years of searching, he is no closer to finding Yamashita's gold. But at least the map confirms to Roger his initial instincts are right. There is treasure somewhere around Baguio. While combing the jungles around Baguio, Roger Rojas finally gets the clue he's been searching for. A cryptic map of the tunnel complex used to hide gold taken by the Japanese during World War II. Then Roger meets a man who seemed to offer him his next breakthrough, Eusebio Okubo. Okubo tells Roger he served under the Japanese as an interpreter during their occupation of the Philippines.
There were a lot of Filipinos who claimed to know where Japanese buried treasure was, mainly because an awful lot of Filipinos had, perforce, worked with the Japanese, not necessarily what we would call collaborators, but simply because the Japanese needed, quote, strivers, interpreters, all that sort of thing.
Okubo confesses he served none other than General Yamashita. While working for him, Okubo had witnessed Yamashita taking a large quantity of gold to Baguio towards the very end of the war. And then Okubo reveals the crucial piece of information Roger was after. The gold was in wooden boxes, stashed in a tunnel, not far from Baguio General Hospital.
So this was the final link. This allowed him to tie the bow together and have the perfect package. And now he knows where to go, he knows where to dig. He was elated because it now pinpointed the area for him to look at.
But little does Roger know, he has a rival. The most powerful man in the Philippines, President Ferdinand Marcos. In 1965, Marcos had been democratically elected, but rapidly became a pathologically greedy dictator.
Money was extremely important to Ferdinand Marcos. He loved it like nothing else.
And there is only one person who can match Marcos's greed. His shopaholic wife, Imelda. But Imelda's lavish lifestyle wasn't the only reason Marcos needed money.
The richer you were, the more powerful you were. It's that simple. It's a very simple equation.
And nothing can make Marcos more powerful than finding Yamashita's gold.
It's not at all surprising that Marcos was interested in Yamashita's gold because he was a thug, basically. And the mere thought of the promise of gold, and he would have been onto it like a shot.
Compared to Roger, Marcos has a serious advantage in the hunt for Yamashita's gold. Power.
It was incredibly easy for Marcos to use his power to find the gold. He had entire armies at his disposal. Armies, ships, experts on maps and deciphering all sorts of clues.
Despite all these resources, Marcos hasn't found anything.
All right, so I'm gonna end it there, and we're going to pick up on this a little bit later. Very, very important. And this is, in my opinion, this is the important part of this whole thing. That was the gold that they had, Yamashita's gold. That was just a portion of it. One of the key things in this whole thing is that it was by no coincidence that the U.S. entered the war with Japan at that particular time, because that gold had already been stolen and acquired by the U.S. Portions of it was probably left there for the historians to find. But this was the whole thing. This was a part of the same gold that the U.S. knew that there was going to be a rightful claim of it by none other than China. And this is what, in my opinion, is a part of what the real truth of this whole thing. Now, where did this gold come from? Well, ladies and gentlemen, that gold was actually put together by the indigenous and was controlled by the indigenous people and was actually brought to market and actually mined out of the ground by the indigenous people that had originally inhabited this corner of this hemisphere, also known as the Califians, the Olmecs, the parts of different Moors and different indigenous people that were in the South Pacific and all into Asia and in Eurasia today. And that land was actually not conquered by these individuals, but was held by way of trade and the expansion of treaties and cooperation. Yes, there was war. And the ones that originally had won those wars were the great conquerors of the past that were later conquered by some of the remnants of what you see now. But in my estimation, a lot of that gold, see, the thing about gold, when it comes out in its original form, you have an idea where that ore is coming from, because gold from the Aborigines down in Australia is different than the gold of the indigenous in Alaska and in the indigenous of California and in the indigenous of China. That's why they got to melt it, so it can no longer show ownership. So listen, we got a caller that's in queue. Let's go to this caller. We got a caller from Atlanta. Welcome, caller, to Kando Radio Show. What's your name and where you're calling from, and what is your question or comment?
Other day, this is Rob from Atlanta, man. Long time.
What's up, brother? How you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm starting the new year off pretty good, man. Peace and blessing to you and the fam, Scotty, and the Black Talk Radio listeners.
Definitely to you, my man. I miss, man. Hit me up at some time. Let's definitely talk.
Okay. No doubt. I just wanted to focus in on a little bit of what you were talking about earlier about the casino of the stocks and bonds, and you know, we did the Forex and whatnot, and I'm still kind of pursuing the Forex, and I was able to utilize that as a tool, you know what I'm saying, and consciously use that as a tool to transfer that wealth from out of the Forex unit to acquire intrinsic value assets, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
way to do it.
You know, from my experience with it, you know, for those that are out there that don't really understand it, you know, if you can't afford, you know, gold bars and all that, you know, start with dimes, you know, silver dimes and silver quarters and stuff like that. You know, if you can't find it at your local coin dealer, because this is very important. It's really, really important. You know, the more research that I get into, you know, understand really what it really is and what it's all about, and what they was talking about on this documentary, was just talking about, and it struck a lot of nerves. It was like, you know, a lot of it's coming together. So overall, I just wanted to chime in. I hadn't talked with you in a minute, and let you know I'm still listening, still following, still learning, and you know, I'll keep my ear to the streets and keep you tuned in, man.
Definitely. My man, let me tell you, see, there's a way to play the casino.
Right.
The way to play the casino is that you never, ever, ever go into the casino with what you can't lose. And you only take from it. And now, of course, but you do that within means, as I said, from there, you move that into your overall savings plan. And that's so, so critical. And that's the difference between, you have to have a real discipline in order to do that, you know, because it's completely rigged. But within that rigged system, you have to establish where, okay, this is probably reasonable for me to withdraw, but that still is not a part of your primary savings plan. Your primary savings plan for you should be to generate as much coupons, and then you transfer that into real money. Now you just became a prodigious saver, because you've taken a debt instrument and moved it into a asset class. Now,
right.
So my man Scotty, you've got a question. You got like 2 minutes. Go ahead, Scotty.
Yes, Dave. So what it sounds like you guys are talking about, and it's something that I think I described before and I've done before. When you're talking about long-term savings, when you're talking about trying to reach a certain goal after 20 years, the stock market isn't for that. What you guys just talked about is like gambling. It's like get out while you're ahead. Walk out the door while you still 700 up on the house. Don't press your luck or be greedy. You know what I'm saying? And then end up losing it all, which you can do on the stock market. But like if you know how to read the stock market and I have to always stress ethics. You do not want to invest in any companies that's invested in 21st century in slavery and human trafficking. Okay, so I always stress that. But you can get in and get out, like in a year's time. You know, I put in 1,000 into some certain stocks, watched them, rolled that stock for about a year. Soon as I saw two, let's just for keep it simplistic, two bars on the graph, it went down. I just dumped it, and I came out like $6,000 ahead after taxes. And then I could take that, invest that in something else. But when you're talking about some kind of 20-year plan, and I'm just going to invest $5 a day, no, no, no. Now, Forex, that's something different, because you can make, let's just call it a nice piece of change in the short term, and then, like y'all said, take that and convert it into something else, like real money. If you're telling people to, you gamble on the stock market, if you make some gains, take what you can out, you know what I'm saying, leave your principal in there, but take what you gain out, and then invest it in like precious metals or something else, like Dave always says, has intrinsic value, or whether that's prepping, you know, investing in your prepping supplies. So am I making any sense there?
No, you're making all the sense. See, the thing is to temper your expectation. You can, there are things that you can take from the market, but what you really should not be doing is you should never be gambling with your life savings. You should never be gambling with your life savings, because those loaded dice are going to roll on you. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you do start out, don't get into the hype of everybody talking about they're going to make you millions of dollars off of two pennies and all that crap, because it's all malarkey. You need to get in there and do your due diligence, get out. That's the plan. That needs to be the only plan. You're not going to get rich overnight. You're just trying to use it as a tool, as a ladder. The Forex and the stock market is they on the same track, but they different trains. You know what I'm saying? So, like I say, you just have to use it as a tool, and don't get caught up in all the hype and all the glitter and glamour, thinking that you're going to, you know, retire in a year or two when, you know, everything's about to implode anyway. It's just too many telltale signs.
You know, when I first took those classes, I took those class. Well, I took a class. It was a mail order class, and I learned a lot. That was a well spent $200, and I learned a lot because I made $6,000 off $1,000. I took home, So I learned a lot, but I was also studying. You know, it was talking about futures tradings and stuff like that. So that's how heavily I was into it. But a lot of people, for the average person, especially the average black person, you hear the old saying, "It take money to make money." You call up an investment house talking about investing in some futures, you better be talking about $5,000 out the gate. You know what I'm saying? If you ain't got $5,000 that you can just put down like that, you not gonna gamble on it. Ain't that? I ain't never been to Vegas, but don't you have to have minimum amount of bets and stuff? So I'm saying, like the caller saying, use it as a tool, leverage it, get out. You know what I'm saying, and do what you got to do. But in terms of telling our people who really don't have money to be gambling like that, you know, we lost so much from the stock market crash of 2008. I mean, not stock market, but the global economy almost being crashed by and what have you. We really don't have that kind of money to be gambling. Some people do. They got 10, 15, 20,000 that they can, you know what I'm saying? But for the masses of our people, no, we don't have that kind of money.
Yeah, it really requires, it's like Rob said, it's two trains on different tracks. Very, very true. The key to this whole thing is to temper your expectations and have that as a small, you know, when they talk about a diverse portfolio, they say you need stocks and bonds, and then you need some of this, you need gold. That's not a diverse portfolio at all, because everything that they put you in is paper-based. Paper gold, paper mortgages, paper stocks, paper bond, paper. Now, if you want to learn, like, if I don't do stocks at all, because it's all cookbooks. If anything that I would do, and I would do it from a very, very small relative area to where I don't lose anything that I'm not comfortable with. And when I'm talking about loss of not comfortable, small, there's anything that I would do would be the Forex market, but it's very tempered. I mean, it's extremely tempered. Extremely, extremely tempered. because I'm not into giving the system anything more. And that is just a very, when I say a small portion, you need to, before you engage in that, you need to build up your expertise in it by and really learn it, and then to never go into that with thousands and thousands of dollars. That's really gambling. Go into it in something that's really, really suitable and feasible for you. All right? Now, that may mean that that's going to be lost very quickly. It definitely means there's ways to structure and everything else. But, hey, we don't have much time. We'll definitely have to come back on this. My man Rob, man, good hearing from you. And hope to hear from you pretty soon. Listen, everyone, it's never goodbye. As always, I'll see you later. And before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give one away. And much love, much respect to you all. We'll talk to you soon. Great creator, willing. Peace.